The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
It's a great time to save big on everything for your next project at Menards. Get free estimates fast on new energy-efficient windows from Jeld-Wen. Choose from vinyl or wood windows and customize the perfect size and unique features for your home. Save big on all Jeld-Wen windows today. View our entire selection of Jeld-Wen windows on Menards.com. Plus, the weekly flyer for other great deals happening now.
Save big money at Menards.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Humane Podcast, your tech insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data-first world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and tech leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and enterprises. Welcome back, listeners, to another episode of Humane, the Tech Insider podcast on the data economy. From the physical circuit chips on your smartphone to the software powering GPT models, we live in a data world. Humane interviews the founders, investors, executives, and leaders that are creating the world that we live in for consumers and enterprise. On today's episode, we're featuring Max Cho, who is the CEO of CoverageCat, revolutionizing the insurance industry, a market that all of us need to grow and love for our daily lives. Max, thanks so much for joining us on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, David.
Well, before we dive deep into what you've been building and scaling for your startup, I'd love to hear a little bit about your background, if you could share with our listeners.
Absolutely. Working backwards, we just started CoverageCat a couple of years ago and joined Y Combinator, did the whole fundraise thing and launched, and are really happy to be solving a lot of people's insurance problems. Before that, I worked at Google on people's likelihood to be influenced by advertising exposure. Earlier than that, I also was a product manager at Two Sigma, which is a quantitative hedge fund, and at Microsoft, where I worked on a lot of software reliability problems. So I have a lot of horror stories about ways software can go bad.
Oh, we love software, and it's so fascinating in this like data-driven and AI-driven world that we're in today. I think a lot of creators and builders think that tech debt only exists with software, but tech debt can exist with any type of product. Not to put you on the spot, but you know, what are some of those stories that you've experienced that may have led you to found and ultimately create CoverageCat?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was getting an opportunity to see the way that software interacts with the real world. And I think all of us know that software has a belief about how things are. You know, your database represents people as, you know, rows and numbers and strings, but then there's the reality of what's happening in the world. And the history of a lot of great software companies that have tried to span into the real world is one of dismal failure, because the real world is so much more complicated than your SQL database, let's say. And I saw insurance as this interesting kind of hybrid thing in which the business of insurance is really pretty unkind to it. It's paper shuffling, right? The product is a PDF, it's a contract. But the software products behind that can be much better than having to deal with the difficulties of the really hard parts of the real world. And I think in the 1980s and the 1990s, hedge funds and finance saw a lot of that, in which they had this very real world product that they eventually successfully computerized, and the process of translating from a people-driven human world into a hybrid world was a revolution for them.
It's so fascinating to see how just when you think something has been solved because of technology and the use case, things get more complex. And I think one of the things I've learned working in the product world is delete as much as you can, and then feel free to add things back, because simplicity is key.
Yeah, every line of code is a future that you will have to pay down. Absolutely.
Oh, come on. We love tech debt sometimes, but I don't know. I'm half kidding here. Awesome. And so it's great to see that, you know, after you've done a lot of software products through Microsoft to Sigma and Google, it led you to launch Coverage Cat. You went through Y Combinator. You're building your startup. Can you tell us a little bit about that genesis story and how the road has been so far with Coverage Cat?
There's many paths into insurance, but I think one way that you can get involved with insurance is through having something horrible happen to you, which unfortunately is kind of my story, in which when I was in high school, I knocked out a bunch of teeth and had to go navigate the intricacies of the interaction between, you know, health insurance and dental insurance, which is a pretty poor product for a lot of Americans. And it made me realize that the whole thing is governed just by, you know, piles of paragraphs on paper. And depending on interpretations of those piles of words, you can get pretty different financial outcomes. And so I fast forward a decade, and I've worked in all these areas where people found opportunity to take normal, ordinary person problems and make them computer problems. And I said, oh, insurance is one of those places where that can work well. And that's what made us want to start this. The nexus of the idea is actually incredibly simple. I think all of us know that shopping for insurance is tedious and laborious. And I thought, well, why can't we just know the millions of insurance prices available to you so that we can tell you, hey, you know, instead of buying from X company, person like you is going to get a better price at Y. So instead of whatever, calling Geico and then calling Liberty and then calling State Farm and calling everybody, you could just know in advance what's the best option.
Because isn't it just the classic broker business of everyone wants to hide information? They want to have these gaps in knowledge so that they can control that flow. And for most consumers, you wouldn't know what's left from right on these different brokers.
That's right. I would actually say insurance is even less mature than that, in that many people don't use brokers, but it's about half and half. Half of Americans buy direct and half Americans use brokers. But even among the brokers, if you talk to brokers, they will tell you that their job is intensely laborious, and their own process for producing the best outcomes for their clients is, it's like bricklaying. And I think that that is really where we can step in and improve.
So there's so much manual processes occurring, whether you're going direct, whether you're going through brokers. It's convoluted, it's complex, there's not a lot of transparency. And so this brings up the topic of why you built Coverage Cat, both from your personal experience and from the pain point that different consumers are experiencing. Where is the product today? And maybe tell us about like how different technology in your product, maybe including AI, is helping to modernize this insurance stack.
Yeah, I think everyone can sort of imagine what happens when you try and go fix your insurance. Either you personally have gone and dealt with a bunch of insurance companies, or you work with a broker, and who knows kind of what happened on their end, but they generated a bunch of quotes and you took a look at them, and who knows what happened after that. And actually, even worse than that, if you do this online, a lot of the businesses you interact with are actually just going to resell your information. Their business is not producing insurance, their business is producing leads. And that's a pretty unpleasant experience for a lot of consumers.
Lots of beautiful spam phone calls and emails. Do not disturb is always on now.
Yeah. And so we looked at that and said, well, once you've observed a corpus of a couple million different insurance prices, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of prices, you actually have a much better opportunity to use statistics to guide your hand. And you're like, oh, I'm pretty sure that this person who's paying, let's choose an extreme example. If you're paying, you know, $14,000 a year for an auto policy in the state of New York and you're a reasonable driver, we know that's a terrible price. And we know that that is occurring to people because they don't realize there's a better price out there for them. And so that's just our view on it. Like, see enough data, figure out which factors are producing outcomes in this model, and then tell people what the better option is likely to be.
And there's so much price disparity in a variety of scenarios around the country. One of them you just mentioned, like in New York, could be an auto driver who, for a variety of reasons, doesn't have access or information. So they're stuck in a policy without knowing there's something better. And in every state, it's kind of different. I know right now there's this, in 23 and 24, there's this big crisis going on in Florida with insurance. A lot of companies have, for example, pulled out after the Surfside building collapse that occurred a few years ago. And that's causing a lot of fluctuation in the market. But even then, the governors recently announced in the first half of 2024 that they're going to bring back in regulation. I'm curious, I know this is kind of a sidebar, but what's your take on some of these crises and if your platform can offer more support, right, for insurance policies, especially when different changes are occurring that could be unexpected?
Absolutely. In the admitted market, which is like standard normal policies that people are buying, the price is actually set in that you, the insurance company, file paperwork requesting a particular rate that you can charge. And then the Department of Insurance will typically, you know, approve or deny that. And they have a bunch of checks and procedures basically to decide whether to approve your rate. And what happened in a lot of states is they didn't approve rate changes for a long time. And then significant inflation occurred, especially around the price of vehicles, the price of home construction. And so suddenly, when those prices rise, if there's an insurance claim, you know, the amount the insurance company pays out also rises. So the insurance companies are really desperate to raise prices. And it's not like Walmart. You can't just go and choose a new price. And instead, so that they're waging a war against the states that are limiting their ability to raise price in order to try to become profitable or sustainable again. And, you know, some of them have gone thermonuclear and declared, oh, we're not going to do business in the state of California. We're not going to do business in the state of Florida. To solve this in Florida, the state has actually become really one of the largest insurers and is taking up a lot of that slack. It's an interesting problem of, like, at what point does the government step in as the insurer of last resort? And in Florida, we're well on that way.
And this is such an interesting use case in Florida. It comes to mind as I hypothesize about this, like, well, what does it mean then if your insurance goes up from, let's say you're paying X a year, and now suddenly it's 3 or 4X, and maybe you're someone who is elderly and you have a fixed income budget and you can no longer afford it. What happens now when a lot of people become uninsured? And it becomes this dual purpose conflict ultimately between the state and loans and homeowners. And to me, it seems like it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah, people who don't live in Florida, I think, have little appreciation for quite how traumatic this can be. And we had a client recently who happened to live on the wrong side of the interstate in Miami. And you might be like, why does the wrong side of the interstate matter? Well, for this particular insurance company, which side of the interstate you're on is a huge price determinant, which is maybe not a great risk model, but that's what they do. And so because this person lives on the wrong side of this highway, their home premium is actually going to be about $25,000 a year for a not that expensive home. If you're paying $25,000 a year in home insurance, and that's a pretty huge chunk of your budget.
Yeah, and so I'm hopeful that in 2024, we do see some resolution here. Do you have any predictions based on the work that you've done in the space for maybe where this may pan out ultimately for the state of Florida?
Since insurance price changes are approved by regulators, they lag the actual market, right? Like you can sort of think of, you know, so you see clouds before you feel the rain. Well, this, the same problem is occurring here in which you can see the crisis happening, but the prices actually haven't risen enough yet. So you're going to continue seeing this problem in this story probably for the next year or two. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. Everything's often a lagging indicator. We even see with the Fed on their rate cuts or rate hikes with respect to inflation and policy, right? It usually takes a quarter or two or more till the broader impact is seen in the economy.
Yeah, and last quarter, the largest single inflation growth measure was vehicle insurance across the U.S.
Interesting. So we're no longer looking at just homeowners insurance in sometimes isolated cases, like in Florida and California with natural disasters, but also with auto vehicles. Tell us more. Why are cars that we are sitting in our garage or our parking lots most of the time having such an inflation in prices now?
There's always a multifaceted story to tell here, and so I'm not going to do it justice, but basically, you might recall in 2020 and 2021, the largest inflation increases came from new and used vehicle prices. There was a huge scarcity of used vehicles, for instance, and that in turn led to vehicle prices rising, and that of course leads to vehicle premiums rising for insurance, and you're just finally beginning to see that appearing in the inflation in the BLS data.
So it truly sounds like if we're tying this all together, I know we're speaking about broader economic themes, but all these scenarios with price disparities, lack of information, is creating the right opportunity for a company like CoverageCat to offer all the solutions for consumers so they get the right possible decision and at the end of the day, save money.
Yeah, you should never start a startup, in my opinion, in an industry in which everyone's really happy. So one of the reasons that we wanted to get into this is because we felt there was a crisis coming on, and we were like, okay, there's got to be a better way for this industry to function. And of course, you know, there is. Let's say that overall, the personal lines U.S. industry market is like $500 billion a year. And you might be like, oh, $500 billion, you know, they probably pay in about what they take in. But unfortunately, insurance is actually so inefficient that although they're taking in $500 billion, they're really only paying out a much smaller portion of that. And then they're losing the rest in the friction and the inefficiency of the business. I am optimistic that, you know, years down the road, the U.S. insurance industry will look more like, let's say, stock brokering, where stock brokering used to be this really high friction and really inefficient and expensive process. And now for retail American traders, it's $0. It's free.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And this is the big dilemma we often see with technology, especially cutting edge technology, about when does policy and government come in and do they join too soon or usually too late? I think we're seeing in the AI industry, for example, the last couple of years has been this rise of generative AI, and it's now starting to appear everywhere in the economy, from these co-pilots, right, humans and machines working together, to even AI agents that are automating certain workflows. We're seeing it, of course, with consumer applications, specifically around writing and creative and copy. But beyond that, perhaps every industry will have some impact here as well. Max, in your take, what are some of the impacts of AI on the fintech industry with specifics to insurance more broadly?
A big bombshell here was an OpenAI paper that tried to list estimates of future employment effects on various job titles in industries from AI. And near the top of the list was insurance agents, where they flagged, oh, they were like, oh, insurance agents are going to be really one of the most impacted areas for labor. And it's funny because at the same time as they published that, there was this funny article in the Wall Street Journal that looked at the last 30 years of technology in insurance and concluded that the human agents had won. It turns out, you know, people have been foretelling the doom of the human agent for a long time, and it hasn't come true. Is there a difference here? Who's right? I believe there is a sector of American consumers who really like their agents and really like buying through a person and really like speaking to someone on the phone about their insurance policy. But I also believe there is increasingly opportunity for people who never pick up the phone and never want to have that conversation to get the outcome, the better outcome that they would have had from a human, but through a more automated process.
You know, what comes to mind is very much like scenarios around home buying, right? Do you want to buy from someone that you have a very high touch a relationship and they show you all the homes? Or would you do like Zillow and just look at video and photos? The same thing might even be, we could say, on the insurance side too, as well, on car buying, right? Would you go to a dealership and have that experience, or just go to Carvana and then, you know, press one button and almost like Amazon, it's there the next day at your home? So it sounds like there are different industries like those where some people prefer high touch and others prefer low touch.
Whenever people talk about automation, though, they should spend more time considering how expensive the human labor really is. In a lot of industries, humans are startlingly cheap compared to the prices you might end up paying otherwise. And that's one of the stories of the failures of automation and the slow progress of industrialization has been about competing with humans is hard. Humans are remarkable and they're remarkably cheap too.
Well, humans can have a variety of levers, right, to play. And at this current point in 2024, depending on what type of products we're working with in data and AI, some of it can be automated. You know, again, we've been seeing the rise of these AI agents and these co-pilots. I'm curious your general outlook on this, Max, if you think we're going to, with insurance industry, move towards maybe a splintering. Some will be human only, some will be human and co-pilots, some will be AI agents. Are you seeing any directionality, or what's your take on it?
Unlike the OpenAI folks, I think I see a lot more challenge in implementing AI here. And challenge is good. Challenge is not a bad sign at all. The chief one in my mind is when you tell the customer something in insurance, you're creating significant liability for yourself. If you inaccurately represent something, your company is on the hook for that. And so I think right now, the state of, let's say, chatbots is actually, they're really best in an environment in which being wrong is not that expensive, is not that bad. But you don't have that in insurance. And so we'll see. We use AI in many interesting parts of what we're doing, but it is not where you would expect. It is not the part of the business that perhaps a naive viewer would look at it and say, sure, that's where we're going to stick it in.
Right. Because some of the issues are when I think about insurance and reinsurance, you know, I got my career started at Aflac doing actuarial loss experience monitoring. So like in the actual prediction of pricing for models, I think that's a pretty well-defined business where the actuaries and data scientists have different pricing parameters for certain products. But just like you alluded to earlier, Max, sometimes they don't make sense. One side of the highway, $25,000 more premium for your homeowner's insurance. There's a lot of strange things going on there. And this begs the question, how explainable are the models? How explainable is the pricing here? And ultimately, who's going to create the accountability for the insurance industry? And when or why will the insurance industry require them?
It's much worse than that, David. Like when we initially wrote our pricing model, I actually had hard-coded some values where I said, you know, if you buy more insurance, like if you will pay more money, then the price will always go up. But it turns out, I thought I had a bug, but it turns out there exist insurance companies and rate sheets in the world in which buying more insurance produces a lower price. And that to me suggests something fundamentally wrong in what they're producing. But nonetheless, that's the reality on the ground of what people offer.
Yeah, and I think perhaps some of the issues could be the regulation in the space. This might be what we're talking here, of course, in the show about insurance products primarily in the United States, right? The land of capitalism and yes, democracy. So it's perhaps our free market.
The land of litigation is why it matters so much here.
That was going to be my question. I was going to say, is it because of free market economics? Is it because of litigation? Like, why is it so complicated? Is it this complicated in other countries, or is this like a U.S. problem?
Pinning the causal blame is always challenging, but the U.S. insurance market is not aided, in my opinion, by a couple of things. There was a law passed over a century ago that basically said that insurance companies are allowed to collude for certain purposes and are exempt from certain antitrust rules. So I don't think that's been particularly good for American consumers. And I think the other part of insurance in which it is not a federal product, but is instead different and distinct in every state with each state's own regulations and compliance, has significantly constrained options for consumers in a way that it wouldn't be if it was a better managed product.
Interesting. So, today, of course, I would assume, right, CoverageCrat is focusing on the U.S. market, but maybe if you can share some parallels, how do you find maybe some of your like economic foresight? How are other countries experiencing? Would you say like, is the U.S. market more mature and actually better overall, or maybe like a market like Chile actually has a better insurance market?
Speaking just from the consumer's perspective, it is easier to buy the best insurance in a place like Germany or the United Kingdom than in the US. A company like CoverageCat wouldn't need to exist in those places because of the superior functioning of their market. And in a way, that's sad. Like, I would actually prefer it if a company like CoverageCat didn't ever need to exist and the problem was just solved. But I don't know how to make that happen. So instead, the solution I see is to build that product ourselves.
Well, it's important to solve problems where there's a true painkiller. And it sounds like that's what you and your team are doing at Max here at CoverageCat. Perhaps if you could share with the audience a little bit about what would that journey look like if today I wanted to work with your product, what would that flow look like to use your platform?
Yeah, well, you can just visit our website and sign up if you're interested. We're only live in 5 states. So if you have to be a resident of one of those 5 states, again, returning to the question of why is it regulated the way it's regulated, can't just be nationwide in 1 second. But you can just sign up and we'll find better insurance options for you. And even if you don't want to sign up, we actually have this really cool tool where you can browse millions of insurance prices without telling all of the data about yourself. You can just go pick a state, pick a car you drive, whatever variable you're curious about, and then see what prices other people pay for those kinds of products.
And of course, you're only live in 5 states today. I imagine when you got started, you're in 1 state and then grew to 2, 3, 4, 5. Can you share with the audience a little bit about like your roadmap over the next year and maybe some things we should look out for trends, both with what you're building?
Yeah, our dream is really to eventually be that one-stop shop that fixes all of this for you. So instead of this being a nuisance that you have to deal with periodically, why isn't there a place where you can just enter your information and then you'll get a price notification? We'll be like, hey, turns out in your state, switching to, let's say, Progressive is going to end up being better for you when a new rate filing occurs. We can have those kinds of predictive notices. We can look at the composite of the several different insurance policies you hold and optimize for that, where there's maybe a better outcome if you unbundle or if you do bundle, depending on your circumstances. Sometimes one is true, sometimes the other. That's our dream. That's where we'd love to be. And ultimately, I hope that the millions and millions of people who are buying the wrong insurance stop that and switch to the better one, because it'll just save everyone a bunch of hassle.
And it sounds like, again, most of this pain point is just people are not educated. We don't know what we don't know. And it makes sense, like every year or so, you should review your insurance. Don't assume that your firm is giving you the best price if they're only increasing your rates year after year.
But it's too much work. I don't think normal people actually want to go shop for 40 insurance policies every year. That's why. Leave it to us. It's sort of our view. But yes, if you're someone who loves doing that, knock yourself out. You can re-rate shop constantly. Go for it.
Create your own Google spreadsheet, right? Put them all out there and conduct the search process. But it's a lot of work. And like you mentioned, who has the time, the patience to work with all these?
And many insurance companies actually won't sell you direct. So even if you really wanted to buy a particular insurance product, you can't produce a price for it yourself, which is also stupid, but whatever. That's just the way it goes.
So another question might be more thinking on like policy and regulation. Like in an ideal world, like let's say if you had the influence to lobby and support changes in the system, are there certain like this core law or this policy you'd like to have a change or ruling, which would also maybe support companies like CoverageCat to be able to build and scale faster to save more time and money for consumers?
Speaking as someone who buys insurance and as a consumer as well, I get really frustrated when insurance companies compete on exclusions. And they do this in part because they know that consumers are not going to read the details of the policy. But insurance at its core is about helping people manage risks that they cannot price and anticipate. So when I see an exclusion for, let's say, something like a mudslide, how many homeowners know the likelihood of a mudslide? It's just not within anyone's real normal analysis. And I believe the job that society has given insurance companies is to put a price on those kinds of things. And I'm disappointed when I see a world in which consumers are just constantly festooned by complicated exceptions that they didn't realize are happening to them.
Now, would it be to my benefit for different policies? Should I throw them into, you know, a GPT-4 chatbot and ask about these exclusions? Would that help me out? Or what suggestions would you also have?
Well, read your policy. You don't need to throw it into ChatGPT. They're pretty easy to read and they're not that many pages. But if that sounds like too much trouble, I mean, I actually think since you framed it as a regulatory and policy question, what I would like to see is I would like to see regulators emphasize more strongly that competing around this kind of exclusionary view is not in the best interest of anyone. And instead, what we should hope to have is a world in which the insurance company is a much more effective price creator, in which rather than excluding things, they're putting the prices on those risks. And then you can really see that. Whereas right now, it's kind of obfuscated.
A lot of hidden information in the data that we hope to discover more over time. Summarizing everything here today, Max, you've been sharing a lot of great knowledge with the audience. So what call to actions or next steps would you like to share with our listeners?
Self-interestedly, if you're someone struggling with insurance problems, please come to Coverage Cat and give us a try. It is literally my entire day job to be a professional that solves your insurance problems, and that's what we love to do. And if you're someone who loves data, check out our data tools. We have this great thing to help you decide whether you should file a claim because it'll increase your rates later. We've got a thing to help you figure out which vehicles are the most expensive to insure. Check us out, and we love your feedback as well.
Fantastic. Well, I'm looking forward to playing with these data tools. Sounds a great way to know if this is a whole nother topic we could save for a future episode. But do you file or do you not file? That's right. Your prices can go up and it's a lot of things that the common consumer doesn't know. And it's great that you're sharing all these insights with us today. Max Cho, the CEO of Coverage Cat. Thanks for joining us on Humane.
Absolutely. Thanks, David.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Humane Podcast. Did the episode measure up to your thoughts on ML and AI, data science, developer tools, and technical education? Share your thoughts with me at humanepodcast.com/contact. Remember to share this episode with a friend, subscribe and leave a review, and listen for more episodes of Humane.